their screams hurt him, closed his hand around Farid as if he were a precious find, and with the other hand flicked the screaming men away into the forest like a child brushing a spider off its clothes. Then he put his hand to his ear again and looked up at the tree, still searching for something, as if he had suddenly remembered what he had come for. "Roxanne!" It was Darius's voice that Meggie heard echoing through the tree, hesitant and firm at the same time. "Roxanne, I think he came back because of you. Sing!" Chapter 69 The Adderhead's Bedchamber. Risa flew after one of the servants who were carrying buckets of blood and water to the Adderhead's bedchamber. He sat there, in a silver tub, red up to his neck, gasping and cursing. Such a terrible sight that Risa feared for Mo more than ever. What revenge would make up for such suffering? Thumbling looked around when she flew to the wardrobe by the door, but she ducked in good time. It could be useful to be small. Dustfinger sparks were burning on the walls. Three soldiers were flicking at them with damp cloths, while the Adderhead put his blood-stained hand over his smarting eyes. His grandson stood beside the tub, arms folded, as if that would protect him from his grandfather's bad temper. What a small, thin child he was, as handsome as his father and delicately built like his mother. But unlike Violante, Jacopo didn't resemble his grandfather at all, although he imitated the Adderhead's every gesture. "She didn't!" He thrust out his chin. He had copied that from his mother, although presumably he didn't know it.
"Oh, no. Then who else helped the Blue Jay, if not your mother?"
A servant poured the contents of his bucket over the Adderhead's back. Risa felt sick when she saw the blood running over the pale nape of his neck. Jacopo, too, looked at his grandfather with both fear and disgust, and quickly glanced away when the Adderhead caught him at it.
"Yes, you just look at me," he snarled at his grandson. "Your mother helped the man who did this to me."
"She didn't. The Blue Jay has flown away. Everyone says he can fly, and they say he's invulnerable, too."
The Adderhead laughed. His breath whistled.
"Invulnerable? I'll show you just how invulnerable he is once I've caught him again. I'll give you a knife, and you can find out for yourself."
"But you won't catch him."
The Adderhead smacked his hand down in the bath of blood, splashing Jacopo's pale tunic with red.
"Watch out! You're getting more and more like your mother."
Jacopo seemed to be wondering whether this was a good thing or not. Where was the white book? Risa looked around her. Chests, clothes thrown over a chair, the bed untidy. The Adderhead slept poorly. Where did he hide it? His life depended on the book, his immortal life. Risa looked for a casket, perhaps a precious cloth in which it was wrapped, even though it stank and was rotting. But suddenly the room went completely dark, so dark that only sounds remained, the splashing of the bloody water, the soldiers breathing hard, Jacopo's cry of alarm.
"What's that?"
Dustfinger sparks had suddenly died down. Risa felt the bird's heart in her breast beating even faster than usual. What had happened? Something must have happened, and it couldn't be anything good. One of the soldiers lit a torch, putting his hand around the flame to keep it from dazzling his master.
"At last!"
The Adderhead's voice sounded both relieved and surprised. He waved to the servants, and they went on pouring the contents of their buckets over his itching skin. Where had they caught all the fairies? Fairies slept at this time of year. The door opened as if the story itself were answering her, and Orpheus came in.
"Well," he asked with a deep bow, "were there enough fairies, Your Highness, or shall I get you some more?"
"This will do for the time being."
The Adderhead filled his hands with the red water and dipped his face into it.
"Do you have anything to do with the fire going out?"
"Do I have anything to do with it?"
Orpheus smiled with such self-satisfaction that Risa longed to fly down and peck his pale face to pieces with her beak.
"I do indeed," he went on. "I've persuaded the Fire Dancer to change sides."
No, it couldn't be true. He was lying. The bird in her pecked at a fly, and Jacopo looked up.
"Keep your head down, Risa," she told herself, "even though it's dark." She wished the feathers on her breast and throat weren't so white.
"Good. But I hope you didn't promise him any reward for it."
The adder had plunged deep into the bloody water.
"He's made me a laughingstock to my men. I want to see him dead, and dead beyond recall this time. But that can wait. What about the blue jay?"
"The Fire Dancer will lead us to him, for no reward at all."
The words were terrible enough, but the beauty of Orpheus's voice made them even worse.
"He'll lay a trail of flames, and your soldiers will only have to follow it."
"No, no," Risa began trembling. Dustfinger surely hadn't betrayed Mo again. "No." A suppressed cry came from her bird breast, and Jacopo looked up at her again. But even if he did see her, there was nothing there but a trembling swift, lost in the dark human world.
"Is everything ready for the blue jay to set to work at once?" asked Orpheus.
"The sooner he's finished, the sooner you can kill him."
"Oh, Meggy, what kind of being did you read here?" Risa thought desperately. With his shining glasses and flatteringly beautiful voice, Orpheus seemed to her like a demon.
The adderhead heaved himself out of his bath, groaning. He stood there, as blood-stained as a newborn child. Jacopo instinctively flinched back, but his grandfather beckoned him closer.
"My lord, you need to stay in the bath longer for the blood to take effect," said one of the servants.
"Later,"
replied the adderhead impatiently.
"You think I want to be sitting in the tub when they bring me my worst enemy? Give me those towels," he told Jacopo sharply, "and quick! Or do you want me to put you in the dark cell with your mother? Did I say you were getting more like her? No, it's your father you look like. More and more like him all the time."
With a black look, Jacopo handed him the towels lying ready beside the tub.
"Clothes!"
The servants hurried over to the chests, and Risa hid in the dark again. But the voice of Orpheus followed her like a deadly scent.
"Your Grace,
he cleared his throat. "I've kept my promise. The blue jay will soon be your prisoner again, and he'll bind you a new book.
I think I've earned a reward."
"Oh, do you?"
The servants were putting black garments on the adderhead's blood-red skin.
"And what were you thinking of?"
"Well, do you remember the book I mentioned to you? I would still very much like to have it back, and I'm sure you can find it for me. But if that can't be done at once..." Oh, the vanity of the gesture as he smoothed his pale fair hair. "I would also accept your daughter's hand in marriage as my reward for the delivery of the blue jay."
Orpheus.
Risa thought of the day when she had first set eyes on him, in Eleanor's house, accompanied by Mortola and Basta. At the time, she had only noticed that he didn't resemble the men with whom Mortola usually liked to surround herself. He looked strangely harmless, almost innocent, with that childlike face. How stupid she had been. He was worse than any of them. Much, much worse.
"Your Highness!"
That was the piper's voice. Risa hadn't heard him come in.
"We've caught the blue jay. Him and the book illuminator. Shall we bring the jay straight to you?"
"Aren't you going to tell us how you caught him?" purred Orpheus. "Did you pick up his scent with that silver nose of yours?"
The piper replied in as reluctant a voice as if every word bit his tongue.
"The Fire Dancer gave him away. With a trail of flames."
Risa wanted to spit out the seeds, so that she could shed human tears. But Orpheus laughed out loud, happy as a child. And who told you about that trail? Come on, out with it. It took the piper a long time to answer.
You! Who else?
He said hoarsely at last.
And some day I'll find out what devilry you used to do it. Well, he's done it anyway, said the adderhead, after you let the jay escape twice. Take the prisoner to the Hall of 1,000 Windows. Chain him to the table where he's to bind the book, and have every move he makes watched. If this new book makes me sick too, I'll cut out your heart with my own hands, Piper, and believe me, a heart's not as easily replaced as a nose.
Bird thoughts were obscuring Rhys's mind. It frightened her, but how was she to reach Mo without wings? And even if you do fly to him, she asked herself, what then? Are you going to peck out the Piper's eyes so that he can't see the Blue Jay escape? Fly away, Rhysa, it's all over, she thought. Save your unborn child, even if you can't save its father. Go back to Meggy. Bird-like fears filled her. Bird-like fears and human pain. Or was it the other way around? Was she going crazy? Crazy like Mortola? She perched there, trembling, waiting for the bedchamber to empty, and for the adderhead to go and see his prisoner. Why did Dustfinger give him away, she wondered. Why? What did Orpheus promise him? What could be worth more than the life Mo gave him back? The adderhead, Orpheus, the piper, the soldiers, 2 servants with the cushions to support their master's aching flesh. Rhysa saw them all go. But just as she thought she was alone, and was putting her head over the edge of the wardrobe, there stood Jacopo, staring straight up at her. One of the servants came back to fetch the adderhead his coat.
See that bird up there? Jacopo asked. Catch it for me.
But the servant dragged him unceremoniously to the door. You don't give the orders around here. Go and see your mother. I'm sure she'll be glad of company where she is now. Jacopo resisted, but the servant pushed him roughly through the doorway. Then he closed the door and came over to the wardrobe. Rhysa retreated. She heard him pushing something in front of the wardrobe. Fly into his face, she told herself. But then where? The door was closed, the windows draped. The servant threw a black coat at her. She fluttered against the door, against the walls, heard the man cursing. Where could she go? She flew up to the chandelier hanging from the ceiling. But something hit her wing. It hurt. It hurt badly. And she fell.
You just wait. I'll wring your neck. Who knows, maybe you won't taste bad. Sure to be better than what our fine master gives us to eat.
Hands reached for her. She tried to fly away, but her wing hurt, and the man's fingers held on tightly. In desperation, she pecked them with her beak.
Let it go.
Bewildered, the servant turned, and Dustfinger struck him to the ground. There was fire behind him, a traitor's fire. Gwyn was staring hungrily at her, but Dustfinger shooed him away. Rhysa tried to peck his hands when he reached for her, but she had no strength left, and he carefully lifted her from the floor and stroked her feathers.
What's the matter with your wing? Can you move it?
The bird in her trusted him, as all wild creatures did, but her human heart remembered what the piper had said.
Why did you give Mo away?
Because that's what he wanted. Spit the seeds out, Rhysa. Have you forgotten that you're human? Perhaps I want to forget it, she thought, but she obediently spat the little seeds out into his hand. This time none were missing, but she still felt the bird growing stronger and stronger inside her. Small and large, large and small, skin with feathers, skin without feathers. She stroked her arms, felt fingers again, not claws. Felt tears in her eyes, a woman's tears.
Did you see where the white book is hidden?
She shook her head. Her heart was so glad that it could love Mo again.
We have to find it, Rhysa, Dustfinger whispered. Your husband is going to bind the adder another book. Remembering his old trade,
and forgetting the Blue Jay, and in that way he will be safe from Orpheus's words. But that book must never be finished, do you understand? Yes, she understood. They looked everywhere by the light of the fire, groping among damp towels, clothes and boots, swords, pitchers, silver salvers and embroidered cushions. They even reached into the bloody water. When they heard footsteps outside, Dustfinger dragged the unconscious servant with him, and they hid behind the wardrobe on which Risa had been perching. For a bird, the room had seemed as large as a whole world, but now it seemed too cramped to breathe in. Dustfinger placed himself in front of Risa to protect her, but the servants who came in were too busy emptying their master's bath of blood to notice anything. They cursed as they cleared the damp towels away, covering up for their disgust at the adderhead's rotting flesh with mockery. Then they carried the tub out and left Dustfinger and Risa alone again. Search! In every corner, in every chest, in and under the tumbled bed, search for the book! Chapter 70 Burning Words. Fareed found Doria. When they carried him to the tree, Meggie thought, at first, that the giant had crushed him, just as he had crushed the milksop's men, who lay in the frosty grass like broken dolls. No, it wasn't the giant, said Roxanne, as they put Doria down with the other injured men, the Black Prince and Woodenfoot, Silkworm and Hedgehog. This is the work of humans. Roxanne had made one of the lowest nests into a sick room. Luckily, there were only two dead among the robbers, while the milksop had lost many men. Even fear of his brother-in-law wasn't going to bring him back another time. Sootbird, too, was dead. He lay on the grass, with his neck broken, staring up at the sky with empty eyes. Wolves prowled among trees, lured by the smell of blood, but they dared not come any closer, because the giant was curled up like a child under the tree with its nests, sleeping as deeply as if Roxanne's singing had sent him into the realm of dreams forever. Doria did not come around when Minerva bandaged his bleeding head, and Meggie sat beside him as Roxanne cared for the other wounded. Hedgehog was in a very bad way, but the other men's injuries would heal. Fortunately, the Black Prince had only a couple of broken ribs. He wanted to go down to his bear, but Roxanne had forbidden it, and Batista had to keep assuring him that the bear was already chasing snow hares again, now that Roxanne had pulled out the arrow from his furry shoulder. But Doria didn't move. He just lay there, his brown hair full of blood.
"What do you think? Will he ever wake up again?" Meggie asked, as Roxanne bent over him.
"I don't know," Roxanne replied. "Talk to him. Sometimes that calls them back." Talk to him. What should she tell Doria? He had asked her about the other world again and again. So in a soft voice, Meggie began talking to him about horseless carriages and flying machines, ships without sails, and devices that carried voices from one part of the world to another. Eleanor came to see how she was. Fenolio sat beside her for a while. Even Fareed came and held her hand while she held Doria's. And for the first time, Meggie felt as close to him as she had when the two of them followed her captured parents with Dustfinger. Can one heart love two boys at once?
Fareed, said Fenolio quietly after a while, let's see what your fire can tell us about the Blue Jay, and then this story will be brought to an end. A good end.
Maybe we ought to send the giant to the Blue Jay, said Silkworm.
Roxanne had cut an arrow out of his arm, and his tongue was heavy with the wine she had given him to dull the pain. The milksop had left all sorts of things behind, wine and blankets, weapons, riderless horses. "Have you forgotten where the Blue Jay is?" asked the Black Prince. Meggie was so glad he was alive. "No giant can wade through the Black Lake, even if they did once like to look at their reflections in its water."
"No, it wouldn't be as simple as that."
"Come on, Meggie, let's ask the fire," said Fareed.
but Meggie was reluctant to let go of Doria's hand.
You go. I'll stay with him,
said Minerva, and Fenolia whispered,
Don't look so anxious. Of course the boy will wake up again. Have you forgotten what I told you? His story is only just beginning.
But Doria's pale face made that hard to believe. The branch that Farid kneeled on to summon the fire was as broad as the road outside Eleanor's garden gate. As Meggie crouched beside him, Fenolio looked suspiciously up at the children sitting in the branches above them, watching the sleeping giant.
Don't you dare! He called,
pointing to the fir cones in their small hands.
The first of you to throw one of those at the giant will go down after it, I promise you.
But they will throw one sometime, and then what?
Asked Farid, as he carefully sprinkled a little ash on the tree's wooden skin. There wasn't much left, even though he gathered it up again meticulously every time he'd used it.
What will the giant do when he wakes up?
How would I know?
Grumbled Fenolio, casting a slightly worried look downward.
I just hope poor Roxanne doesn't have to spend the rest of her life singing him to sleep.
The Black Prince came over to them too. Batista had to support him. He sat down beside Meggie without a word. The fire was sleepy today. However hard Farid enticed and flattered it, it seemed forever before flames rose from the ashes. The giant began humming to himself in his sleep. Jink jumped up onto Farid's knees, a dead bird in his mouth, and suddenly the pictures came. Dustfinger, in a courtyard, surrounded by large cages. There was a girl in one of them, weeping. Brianna. A black figure stood between her and her father.
Nightmare, whispered Batista.
Meggie looked at him in alarm. The picture dissolved into greyish smoke, and another appeared in the heart of the flames. Farid took Meggie's hand, and Batista uttered a soft curse.
Mo.
He was chained to a table. The piper was with him, and the adderhead, his swollen face looking even more terrible than Meggie had seen it in her worst dreams. Leather and blank sheets of paper lay on the table.
He's binding him another white book,
whispered Meggie.
What does that mean?
In alarm, she looked at Fenolio.
Meggie!
Farid drew her attention to the fire again. Letters were rising from the flames, burning letters that formed into words.
What the devil is that? Fenolio uttered. Who wrote that?
The words blew away and went out among the branches before anyone could read them. But the fire gave Fenolio the answer to his question. Around, pale face appeared in the flames, its circular glasses looking like a second pair of eyes.
Orpheus,
Farid whispered. The flames burned low, slipping back into the ashes as if returning to their nest, but a few fiery words still drifted through the air. Blue jay, fear, broken, die.
What does that mean?
Asked the Black Prince.
It's a long story, Prince.
Fenolia replied wearily.
And I'm afraid the wrong man has written the end of it.
Chapter 71 The Bookbinder. Fold. Cut. The paper was good. Better than last time. Mo's fingertips felt the fibers on its pale white surface, ran along the edges in search of memories. And they came, filling his heart and mind with a thousand images, a thousand and more forgotten days. The smell of the glue took him back to all the places where he had been alone with a sick book, and the familiar gestures made him feel his old satisfaction in giving new life and beauty to a book, saving it from time's sharp teeth, at least for a while. He'd forgotten the peace that came when his hands were doing their work. Fold, cut. Pull a thread through the paper. Mortimer was back again. Mortimer the bookbinder, for whom a knife didn't have to be sharp because a sharp blade killed better, and who wasn't threatened by the words because he was only making the new clothes.
You're taking your time, Blue Jay.
The piper's voice brought him back to the Hall of a Thousand Windows. Don't let it happen, Mortimer, he told himself. Simply imagine that the silver-nosed man is still in his own book. It's nothing but a voice coming out of the letters on the page. The Blue Jay isn't here. Orpheus's words must look for him somewhere else.
You know you're going to die when you've finished it. That's what makes you so slow. Am I correct?
The piper struck him so hard in the back with his gloved fist that Mo almost cut his own hands, and the Blue Jay surfaced for a moment, thinking what it would be like to plunge the blade that cut the paper into the piper's breast. Mo forced himself to put the knife aside and picked up another sheet of paper, seeking peace in gluing all that whiteness together. The piper was right. He was taking his time, not because he was afraid of dying, but because this book must never be finished. And the only reason for every move he made was to bring back Mortimer Folchart, the bookbinder who could not be bound by Orpheus's words. Mo hardly felt them any more. All the despair that had seeped into his heart in that dark cell, all the rage and hopelessness, had faded as if his hands had washed them out of his heart. But what would happen if Dustfinger and Risa didn't find the other white book? Suppose the nightmare devoured Brianna and her father. Would he stand in this hall forever, then, binding blank pages? Not forever, Mo. You're not immortal, luckily. The piper would kill him. He'd been waiting to do it ever since they first met in the Castle of Night. And, of course, the strolling players would sing about the death of the Blue Jay, not Mortimer Folchart. But what would become of Risa and the unborn child? And what about Meggie? Don't think, Mortimer, he told himself. Cut, fold, stitch, win yourself some time, even if you don't yet know what for. When you're dead, Risa can fly away and find Meggie. Meggie. Please, his heart pleaded with the white women. Let my daughter live. I will go with you, but leave Meggie here. Her life is only just beginning, though she may not know yet which world she wants to live it in. Cutting, folding, stitching. He thought he saw Meggie's face on the blank paper. He almost felt her beside him, as he had in the old chamber in the Castle of Night, the room where Violante's mother had lived. Violante. They'd thrown her into one of the cells. Mo knew exactly what would frighten her most down there. She would be afraid of the darkness taking what little vision she had from her. The adder's daughter still moved him, and he would gladly have helped her, but the Blue Jay must sleep. Four candles had been lit for him. They didn't give much light, but they were better than nothing. The chains didn't make working any easier either. Every time he moved, their clinking reminded him that he wasn't in his workshop in Eleanor's garden. The door opened. "There you are!" Orpheus's voice echoed through the empty hall. "This role suits you much better. What made that old fool Fenolio think of turning a bookbinder into a robber?" He stopped in front of Mo with a triumphant smile, just too far away for the knife to reach him. "Yes, Orpheus would think of that kind of thing." As usual, his breath smelled sweetish. "You ought to have known Dustfinger would betray you sometime. He betrays everyone, and believe me, I know what I'm talking about. It's the part he plays best. But presumably, you couldn't pick and choose who'd help you." Mo picked up the leather intended for the cover. It was red, like the cover of the first book. "Ah, so you're not talking to me anymore. Well, I can understand that." Orpheus had never looked happier.
"Leave him to work, Four Eyes, or do you want me telling the Adderhead that he has to live in his itching skin a little longer just because you felt like a nice chat?"
The piper's voice sounded even more strained than usual. Orpheus wasn't making himself many friends.
"Don't forget, your master will soon be rid of that skin, Piper, and he owes it all to me,"
he replied in a supercilious tone. "Your powers of persuasion haven't impressed our bookbinding friend much, if I remember rightly." So, the two of them were competing to see who could be closest to the adder. At the moment, Orpheus seemed to hold the better cards, but perhaps that could be changed.
"What are you talking about, Orpheus?" said Mo, without looking up from his work.
He tasted sweet revenge on his tongue.
The Adderhead need feel grateful to no one but the Piper. I was careless. I ran straight into their arms. You had nothing at all to do with it.
What?
Piqued, Orpheus fiddled with his glasses. That's exactly how I'll tell the tale to the Adderhead, as soon as he's had a good sleep. Mo cut through the leather and imagined that he was cutting the web Orpheus had spun around him. The Piper narrowed his eyes, as if that would help him see more clearly what game the Blue Jay was playing. The Blue Jay isn't here, Piper, thought Mo. But how could you understand that?
Careful, bookbinder.
Orpheus took a clumsy step toward him. His voice was almost cracking. Use your silver tongue to spread lies about me, and I'll have it cut out on the spot.
Oh, yes. By whom?
Mo looked directly at the Piper.
I don't want to see my daughter in this castle, he said softly. I don't want anyone looking for her after the Blue Jay is dead.
The Piper returned his glance and smiled.
That's a promise. The Blue Jay has no daughter, he said. And he'll keep his tongue, too, so long as it speaks the right words.
Orpheus bit his lips so hard that they turned as pale as his skin. Then he moved close to Mo's side.
I'll write new words, he hissed in his ear. Words that will make you writhe like a worm on the hook.
Write what you like, replied Mo, cutting through the leather again. The bookbinder wouldn't feel the words. Chapter 72 So Many Tears. She was crying.
Jacopo had never heard his mother cry before. Not even when they brought his father back from the forest, dead.
He hadn't cried then either, but that was different. Should he call down to her? He kneeled on the edge of the shaft and stared into the darkness. He couldn't see her, only hear her. The weeping sounded terrible. It scared him. His mother didn't cry. His mother was always strong, always proud. She didn't take him in her arms like Brianna. Brianna hugged him even when he'd been cruel to her.
It's because you look like your father, the maids in the kitchen said. Brianna was in love with your father.
She was still in love with him. She had a coin with his picture on it in the bag at her belt. She sometimes kissed it in secret, and she wrote his name on the walls. She wrote it in the air and in the dust. She was so stupid. The sobbing down below grew even more violent, and Jacopo put his hands over his ears. It sounded as if his mother were breaking into small pieces, such tiny pieces that no one would ever be able to put her together again. But he wanted to keep her.
Your grandfather will take you with him, said the servants, back to the Castle of Night, so that you can play with his son.
But Jacopo didn't want to go to the Castle of Night. He wanted to go back to Umbra. That was his castle, and he was frightened of his grandfather, who stank and gasped for air and had skin so spongy you were scared you might dig holes in it with your fingers. It must be all wet with her tears down there. She sounded as if she'd soon be drowning in them. No wonder she was so sad. She couldn't read any books in the darkness, and his mother wasn't happy without books. She loved nothing so much. She loved them far more than him, but never mind that. He didn't want her marrying Four Eyes all the same. Jacopo hated Four Eyes. His voice was like melted sugar on your skin. He liked the Blue Jay and the Fire Dancer, but soon they'd both be dead. Orpheus was going to feed the Fire Dancer to the Nightmare, and as soon as the Blue Jay had finished the new book, they'd flay him. His grandfather had once made him watch a man being flayed alive. Jacopo had hidden away from the victim's screams in the farthest corner of his heart, but he had still heard them there. It was quiet. His mother had stopped crying. Had she cried herself to death? The guards took no notice of him as he bent far over the edge of the black shaft.
Mother!
The word didn't pass his lips easily. He never called her mother. It was as her ugliness that he thought of her. But now she had been crying.
Jacopo!
She was still alive.
Is the Blue Jay dead?
Not yet. He's binding the book.
Where is Brianna?
In one of the cages.
He was jealous of Brianna. Violante liked Brianna better than him. She was allowed to sleep with his mother, who talked to her much more often than she talked to him, her son. But Brianna comforted him, too, when he'd hurt himself, or when the milksop's men taunted him about his dead father. And she was very beautiful.
Orpheus,
he began, but one of the guards grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and hauled him to his feet.
That's enough chatter, he said. Get out!
Jacopo tried to wriggle free, but it was no good.
Let her out!
He shouted, beating his fists against the man's arm chest.
Let her out this minute!
But the soldier only laughed.
Hark at him, will you? He said to the other guard. Mind you don't end up in that cell yourself, midget. Your grandfather has a son now, so his grandson doesn't count for much, especially when he's Cosimo's brat, and his mother is thick as thieves with the Blue Jay.
He pushed Jacopo away so roughly that he fell over, and Jacopo wished he could make flames come out of his hands, like the fire dancer, or kill them all with a sword, the way the Blue Jay had killed so many men.
Jacopo!
He heard his mother call from down below, but when he turned back to the edge of the shaft, the soldiers barred his way.
Get out, I tell you, one of them snapped, or I'll tell Four Eyes to feed you to the nightmare. I bet you're not half as tough as the Illuminator they're keeping in reserve for it.
Jacopo kicked the man's knee as hard as he could and escaped before the other guard could grab hold of him. The passages down which he stumbled were so dark that he saw a thousand monsters in the shadows. It had been better when there was fire burning on all the walls, much better. Where was he to go? Back to the room where they'd locked him in with his mother? No, there were beetles there that crawled into your nose and ears. Orpheus had sent them. He'd told the boy so himself, laughing. Jacopo had changed his clothes 3 times already to get rid of the beetles, but he could still feel them everywhere. Perhaps he ought to go to the cage where Brianna was. No, the nightmare was outside it. Jacopo crouched on the stone floor and buried his face in his hands. He wished them all to hell, Orpheus and the Piper and his grandfather. He wanted to be like the Blue Jay and the Black Prince, and then he'd kill them all, every last one of them. That'd soon stop them laughing, and then he'd sit on the throne of Umbra and attack the Castle of Night, just like his father. But he would conquer it and take all its silver to Umbra, and the strolling players would sing songs about him, and he'd make them put on a show at the castle every day just for him. And the fire dancer would write his name in the sky, and his mother would curtsy to him, and he'd marry a girl as beautiful as Brianna. He saw it all so clearly in his mind's eye as he sat there, in the darkness that protected his grandfather's eyes. He saw it as clearly as the pictures that Balbulus had painted for him. There would be a book about him, Jacopo. A book as magnificent as the one about the Blue Jay, not empty and mouldy like... Jacopo raised his head. The White Book. Yes, why not? That'd certainly make them laugh on the other side of their faces. Jacopo stood up. It would be easy. He must just make sure his grandfather didn't notice that it was gone at once. He'd better leave another book in its place. But which? He rested his hands on his trembling knees. Orpheus had had his books taken away, and his mother's were all gone too. But there were other books in this castle, sick books, as sick as his grandfather's. They were in the room where the Blue Jay had been caught. It was a long way there, and Jacopo got lost a couple of times, but finally the smell of decay guided him, the same smell that surrounded his grandfather. And so did the sooty trail, barely visible in the light of his torch, laid by the fire dancer to give the Blue Jay away. Why had he done it? For silver, like Sootbird? What would he buy with the silver? A castle? A woman? A horse?
Trust your friends, even less than your enemies, Jacopo.
That was what his grandfather had taught him.
There are no such things as friends. Not for a prince.
At one time, his grandfather often used to talk to him. But that was long ago. He has a son now, Jacopo. He chose a book that wasn't too big, the white book was not very big either, and put it under his tunic. There were two guards outside his grandfather's bedchamber. So he was back from seeing the Blue Jay. Perhaps he'd killed him already. No, the new book couldn't be finished yet. Such things took a long time. Balbulus had told him so. But when it was finished, his grandfather was going to make the Blue Jay scream and either marry off his mother to Four Eyes or leave her in that cell until she broke into tiny little pieces. And they would take Jacopo to the Castle of Night with them. Jacopo straightened his clothes and wiped the tears from his eyes. He hadn't even noticed them. They blurred everything, the guards and the light of their torches. Stupid. Crying was stupid.
I want to see my grandfather.
How they grinned at one another. The Blue Jay would kill them all, every man of them.
He's asleep. Get out.
He can't sleep, you idiot.
Jacopo's shrill voice rose. Only a few months ago he would have stamped his foot, but he'd learned that that didn't work particularly well.
Thumbling sent me. I'm to take him his sleeping medicine.
The guards exchanged uncertain glances. Luckily, he was cleverer than any of them. Much cleverer.
Very well. In you go, growled one of them. But mind you don't start carrying on about your mother to him, because if you do, I'll chuck you into that cell with my own hands. Understand?
You're a dead man, thought Jacopo as he walked past the guard.
Dead, dead, dead. Don't you know that yet?
Oh, how good this felt.
What do you want?
His grandfather was sitting on the bed with two servants beside him, wiping the fairy blood off his legs. His eyelids were heavy from the poppy juice he took when he wanted to sleep. And why shouldn't he sleep now? The Blue Jay was caught and was binding death into another book for him.
What are you going to do to the Blue Jay when he's finished?
Jacopo knew exactly what kinds of stories his grandfather liked to tell. The adder had laughed and impatiently waved the servants away. Bowing and scraping, they made their way to the door.
Maybe you do take after me, even if you look like your father.
The adder had let himself drop on his side, groaning.
What would you do to him first?
His tongue was already as heavy as his eyelids.
I don't know. Pull out his fingernails.
Jacopo went over to the bed. There it was, the cushion that the adder had always had with him. To prop up his sick flesh, they said. But Jacopo knew better. He'd often seen his grandfather put his hand under the heavy fabric to feel the leather binding with his fingers. Once, he had even caught a glimpse of the blood-soaked covers. No one paid any attention to what a child saw, not even the adderhead, who trusted no one but himself.
His fingernails! Painful, yes. I hope my son will get ideas like that once he's your age. Although, why does a man need a son when he's immortal? I ask myself that question more and more frequently. Why does a man need a wife or daughters?
The last words were barely audible. The adderhead opened his mouth and a snore came out. The lizard-like eyelids closed and his left hand clutched the cushion in which his death was hidden. But Jacopo had small, slender hands, not at all like his grandfather's. Very carefully, he undid the ribbons tying the fabric, put his fingers inside the cushion, and took out the book. The white book. Although it really should be called the red book now. His grandfather turned his head, and his breath rattled in his sleep. Jacopo reached under his tunic for the volume he had taken from the lost library, and exchanged it for its red twin.
My grandfather's asleep, he told the guards when he came out of the room. And you'd better not wake him, or he'll pull out all your fingernails.
Chapter 73 The Nightmare. Risa had flown away to Silvertongue in the Hall of a Thousand Windows,
The bird will never leave you again, Risa.
Dustfinger had warned her, but she had put the seeds into her mouth all the same. He had had great difficulty in dragging her out of the bedchamber before the Silver Prince came back. The despair in her face went to his heart. They had not found the White Book, and both of them knew what that meant. It wasn't the Adderhead who would die, but the Blue Jay. By the hand of the Piper, Thumbling, all the white women coming for him because he hadn't been able to pay the price death demanded for his life. Risa had flown to him so that Silvertongue would not be alone when he died. Or did she still hope for some miracle to save him? Perhaps. Dustfinger had not told her that death was going to take him again too, and then her daughter. "If you don't find the book," Silvertongue had whispered to him before sending him away to lay the fiery trail for the Piper, "then at least let us try to save our daughters." Our daughters. Dustfinger knew where to find Brianna, but how was he to protect Meggie from the Piper or the white women themselves? Of course, the Piper's men had tried to hold him fast once he'd led them to the Blue Jay, but it was easy to escape them. They were still looking for him, but the darkness in the castle hid the Adderhead's enemies, as well as eased the pain in his eyes. Orpheus seemed very sure that his black dog was enough to guard Brianna. Two torches burned beside the cage where she sat, crouching like a captive bird. But there was no soldier on guard. The real guard lurked somewhere in the shadows, in a place that the torchlight didn't reach. How in the world had Orpheus managed to tame it? "Don't forget, he read it out of a book," Silvertongue had said. "A book for children, too, although I'm not sure that Fenolio made the nightmare any less dangerous because of that. But it's made of words, and I'm sure that Orpheus himself used words to make it obey him. Just a few rearranged words, a couple of slightly twisted sentences, and the terror in the night becomes an obedient dog." "But Silvertongue," Dustfinger had thought, "have you forgotten that everything in this world is made of words?" He knew only that this nightmare was not less dangerous, but even more sinister than those found in the Wayless Wood. It would not, like its fellows, be driven away by fairy dust and fire. It was woven of darker stuff. "What a pity you didn't ask the white women its name," he said to himself, as he slowly made his way toward the cages. "Don't the songs say that that's the only way to kill a nightmare?" But that was what he had to do. Destroy the creature so that Orpheus could not call it back. "Forget the songs, Dustfinger," he told himself as he looked around. "Write your own, just as the Blue Jay must write his now." At the sound of his whispering, the torches flared up as if to welcome him, weary of the darkness surrounding them. And Brianna raised her head. How beautiful she was, as lovely as her mother. Dustfinger looked around again, waiting for the darkness to start moving. Where was it? He heard a snuffling sound, felt cold breath, panting like a large dog's. To his left, the shadows grew and became blacker than black. His heart began to beat painfully fast. Ah, so the fear was still there, even though he so seldom felt it now. Brianna got to her feet and stumbled away until her back was up against the bars. Behind her, a painted peacock spread its tail on the grey wall.
"Go away," she whispered. "Please, it will eat you."
Go away, a tempting idea. But he had once had two daughters. Now he had only one, and he would keep her. Not forever, but perhaps for a few years yet. Precious time. Time, whatever that was. All was cold behind him, dreadfully cold. Dustfinger called up the flames and wrapped himself in their warmth, but the cold made the fire burn low and go out, leaving him alone with the shadow.
"Please, please go away,"
Brianna's voice urged, and the love in it, that she usually hid so well, warmed him more than the fire ever could. He called on the flames again, more sternly this time, reminding them that he and they were brothers, inseparable. Hesitantly they licked up from the ground, trembling as if a cold wind were blowing through them. But they burned, and the nightmare retreated and stared at him. Yes, what the songs said about him and his like was true. It must be true. The songs said nightmares were made entirely of the blackness of the soul, of evil that could not be forgotten or forgiven until they were snuffed out, consuming themselves and taking with them everything they had ever been. The eyes transfixed him, red eyes in all that blackness, eyes both fierce and dull, lost in themselves, with no yesterday and no tomorrow, without light and warmth, caught in their own cold, the freezing entity of evil. Dustfinger felt the fire around him like a warm fur. It almost burned his skin, but it was his only protection against those dull eyes and the hungry mouth that opened, screaming so horribly that Brianna sank to her knees and put her hands over her ears. The nightmare reached a black hand out to the fire. It hissed when he dipped it into the flames, and Dustfinger thought he recognized a face in all the blackness. A face he had never forgotten. Was it possible? Had Orpheus seen it too, and so tamed his black dog by calling it by its forgotten name? Or had he given it that name himself and brought back the man whom Silvertongue had sent to his death? Brianna was crying behind him. Dustfinger sensed her trembling through the bars, but he felt no fear now. He was just grateful, grateful for this moment, glad of this new encounter, which he hoped would be their last. "Well, look, who have we here?" he said softly, as Brianna's weeping died down on the other side of the bars. "Do you remember yourself in all your darkness? Do you remember the knife and the boy's thin, unprotected back? Do you remember the sound my heart made when it broke?" The nightmare stared at him, and Dustfinger stepped toward it, still surrounded by flames, flames burning hotter and hotter, nourished by all the pain and despair he was bringing back to mind. "Away with you, Basta," he said, speaking the name loud enough to pierce the heart of all the darkness. "Be gone for all eternity." The face showed more clearly, the narrow, foxy face that he had once feared so much. And Dustfinger made the flames bite into the cold, made them penetrate the blackness like swords, all of them writing Basta's name. And the nightmare screamed again, its eyes suddenly full of memories. It screamed and screamed, while its shape ran like ink, melting into the shadows, dispersing like smoke. Only the cold was left, but the fire ate that too, and Dustfinger fell on his knees and felt the pain leaving him. Pain that had outlasted death itself. He wished for Reed were here with him. He wished it so much that for a few moments he forgot where he was.
"Father?"
Brianna's whisper reached him through the smoke. Had she ever called him that before? Yes, long ago. But had he been the same man then? The bars of the cage bent under the heat of his hands. He dared not touch Brianna, because he felt the fire so strongly in them. Footsteps approached, heavy, rapid footsteps. The nightmare's screams had brought them. But the darkness swallowed up Dustfinger and Brianna before the soldiers reached the cages, and they looked in vain for their black watchman. Chapter 74. The Other Side. The Black Prince was still with Roxanne. She was going to splint his injured leg so that he could walk on it, walk to the castle in the lake. "We have time," Meggie had told him, although her heart was in a hurry. Mo would certainly need as long to bind this white book as he had needed in the Castle of Night. The Black Prince intended to set out with almost all his men to stand by the Blue Jay, but without Eleanor and without Meggie. "Your father made me promise that you and your mother would stay in a safe place," he had told her. "With your mother, I wasn't able to keep my promise, but at least I'll keep it where you're concerned. Didn't you promise him the same thing?" No, she had not. So she would go, even if it almost broke her heart to leave Doria behind. He still hadn't woken up, but Darius would talk to him, and Eleanor, and she would come back. Wouldn't she? Farid was going with her. He would be able to call fire if the weather grew cold on their way, and she had stolen some dried meat and filled one of Batista's leather bottles with water. How could the Black Prince think she would stay after she had seen those fiery words? How could he think she'd leave her father to die, as if this were some other quite different story?
Maggie, the Black Prince doesn't know about the words, Fenolio had pointed out, and he has no idea what Orpheus is up to either.
But Fenolio did know, and all the same, just like the prince, he didn't want her to go.
Do you want what happened to your mother to happen to you too? No one knows where she is. No, you must stay. We'll help your father in our own way. I'll write day and night, I promise you. But what use is that if you don't stay here to read what I've written?
Stay here. Wait. No, she was sorry, but she was going to steal away in secret like Risa, and she wouldn't get lost. She'd waited far too long already. If Fenolio did indeed think of something, and he had certainly been able to write the giant here, then Darius could read it, and the children had Batista and Eleanor, Roxanne and Fenolio to look after them. But Mo was alone, all alone. He needed her. He'd always needed her. Eleanor was snoring gently. Darius slept next to her, in between Minerva's children. Maggie moved as quietly as the woven structure of the nest allowed, picking up her jacket, her boots, and the backpack that still reminded her of the other world.
Ready?
Farid was standing in the round doorway of the nest.
It will soon be light.
Maggie nodded, and turned as Farid stared past her, his eyes as wide as a child's. A white woman was standing beside the sleepers. She looked at Maggie. She had a pencil in her hand, a short, worn-out chalk pencil, and with a look of invitation, she was offering Farid one of the candles that Eleanor had brought from Umbra. Farid went toward her like a sleepwalker, and with a whisper lit the wick. The white woman dipped her pencil into the flame and began to write on a sheet of paper. Maggie had been trying to write a good end to her father's story on it after the giant took Fenolio away. The white woman wrote and wrote, while Minerva whispered her husband's name in her sleep, while Eleanor turned over onto her other side, while Despina put her arm around her brother, and the wind blew through the wickerwork of the nest, almost putting out the candle. Then the white woman straightened up, looked at Maggie once more, and disappeared, as if the wind had blown her away. Farid breathed a sigh of relief when she had gone, and pressed his face into Maggie's hair. But Maggie gently moved him aside, and bent over the paper on which the white woman had written.
"Can you read it?" Farid whispered.
Maggie nodded.
"Go to the Black Prince, and tell him he can spare his leg," she said softly. "We'll all stay here. The song of the Blue Jay has been written."
Chapter 75. The Book. It wasn't easy to make your hands work slowly when they loved what they were doing so much. Mo's eyes stung in the bad light, his ankles were sore from the heavy chains, and yet in the strangest way, he felt happy. It was as if he were binding not the Adderhead's death, but time itself into a book, and with it all fears for the future, all the pain of the past, until there was nothing left but now, this moment when his hands caressed paper and leather.
"I'll bring fire to help you as soon as I freed Brianna," Dustfinger had promised, before leaving him alone to go and act the part of a traitor once more.
"And I'll bring the white book with me," he had added.
However, it was not Dustfinger, but Risa who came. Mo's heart had almost stopped when the swift flew through the doorway. One of the guards had aimed his crossbow at her, but she darted away from the arrow, and Mo had plucked a brown feather from his shoulder. "They haven't found the book," that was his first thought, as the swift settled on a beam above him. But whatever happened, he was glad she was there. The piper was leaning against a column, his eyes following every movement Mo made. Was he going to try doing without sleep for 2 whole weeks? Or did he think this book could be bound in a day? Mo put down his knife and rubbed his tired eyes. The swift spread her wings as if she were waving to him, and Mo quickly bent his head so that the piper's attention wouldn't be drawn to her. But he looked up again when the silver-nosed man uttered a curse. Fire was licking from the walls.
It could mean only one thing. Brianna was free.